My name is Jim Dingman. I am the chair of the Strategic Planning Committee of Pacifica, and this is the May 8th meeting of that committee. I'm calling the meeting to order. First of all, before I do that, John, how are you doing? John Hoffman.
I am doing well. How are you?
Very good. Okay. Can I ask you to call the roll?
Yes, I'll be happy to call the roll. Good evening. James Dingman.
Here.
Fred Dodsworth.
That's me.
Bill Foster. No, Bill. Heather Gray. No, Heather. Donna Grimes.
Present.
Julie Hewitt.
Here.
James Sagerton.
Here.
Nancy Sorden. Elizabeth von Guten.
Here.
And Egberto Willis.
And he is not here.
All right.
I think it's pronounced Willies.
Willies. Thank you. Yeah. I will work on it.
All right. And I guess I've been admonished in the past to ask for excused absences, so I won't do that again. We have quorum. And John, you sent out the minutes a few days ago, if I recall.
That is correct. I sent out the minutes from last month's meeting on Saturday for the public session only, not the executive session. So that's all we're going to be attempting to approve tonight.
All right. And I move that those minutes of what date were they, John?
April 10th.
I move that they be approved. Are there any objections? Okay. And if I hear no objections, by unanimous approval, they are passed. Now, I sent out an agenda, which, of course, we can argue about and debate. It includes a report of elections, updates for 2 minutes. Chris Corey is not here. I was going to have him talk about bonds, Lyndon Foley, NFT, report of program committee, Heather Gray. I also wanted to, if Bill was here, to talk about affiliates. And then just a quick update on AI and Pacifica radio art and production training. I put myself for 2 minutes for that. And then, to have a long-term discussion of 30 minutes before we adjourn at 10 to discuss, our short-term strategic goals, comments on the present situation, what should be our goals, sort of along the lines of the critique that Alex, had raised, Alex Steinberg, who unfortunately is not with us today. Is anything else that people would want to put onto the agenda that I've not included?
Suggest an update on the CPB application.
Yeah, I was going to do that in the updates part. Anything else people want to comment on before I move into this or I moved that we adopt the agenda.
Seconded.
Any objections? All right, hearing none, the agenda is adopted. Let me just move first to the a short report of the elections that we just held for this committee. John, can you report what the results were?
Yes. The voting ended last night at midnight, and there were 7 people that cast ballots, and the winner was James Dingman. He got 4 ballots cast for him. Beth came in second with 2. Alex came in third with 1. And then in the final stage, although the Alex vote transferred over to Beth, so the final tally was James 4, Beth 3.
All right, thank you. And obviously, we all want to work together, and Beth's and Alex's contributions are absolutely invaluable. So they are, as far as I'm concerned, co-equals with all of us here, as all of us are. So let's try to cooperate and move forward. We all know we have a lot of tough issues to tackle. Let me just now, any questions about that update? All right, hearing none, go on, Elizabeth.
I wanted to register that a couple of us had trouble voting with the OpaVote system that we went, we followed the link to the site to vote. We voted. And then it led us to another page that requested a code, and neither of us had a code or knew what code they were referring to. And I guess it worked out, but because of that confusion and the lack of explanation for it or for how it was supposed to work, if that wasn't it, then I would propose that next time we consider using our standard Pacifica tellers. We can cross that bridge when we come to it.
Beth, I'm very open to doing that because, yes, it was confusing for some people and not what you guys are used to. I think this is what WBAI uses all the time, though. What are you guys using, though?
There's a group of tellers chaired more or less by Terry Goodman, and he chooses and trains other people, and they're versed in Pacifica protocol on all of this stuff, and they take into account whatever decisions governance comes up with about how things are supposed to be done. And I think that possibly because of all the confusion with the KPFK LSB this year, some people thought it would be simpler just to go with OPA vote this time, but it doesn't really seem the same to list every possible, all people eligible to be candidates, rather than just have a blank for a vote, a write-in vote. But really, these are all details, and we don't have to decide anything about it today. I don't have any reason to question the outcome, but I just want to raise the technical concerns so that we have a record of at least this much of it for whenever the question comes up again. Thank you.
John, any comments on that?
No, I will do some research to see what program other stations are doing and kind of see how difficult it would be. I'm going to guess it isn't that difficult to get it set up. I similarly don't like it's very inelegant to have all those write-in candidates and try to figure it out. And if there's a better way to do it, I am really open to it at this point.
Yeah, what Beth suggests is a good idea, and we could certainly do it down the road. All right, any more comments on the elections at this point? All right, hearing none, I'm going to move to the next slide.
I have my hand up.
Yeah, go on, Fred.
I have a question. The code, I think that in my experience, I thought that was the code that you put in to show yourself that your vote was counted.
So just a note, there were two people that said they never got the email from OpaVote. And what I did in those situations was I can generate a new code for that person. So I generated a code and I sent it to those people, and then I removed their ability to vote using their email address. So in the perfect world, everyone would just vote off their email address, but people, they get sent to their spam folder and stuff like that. So I just generate a code and everybody gets one opportunity to vote that way. So two people had codes and everyone else had emails.
Okay.
Okay, hearing any other comments about this before we move on? Okay, I'm going to move on to the updates. Okay, so today, it's my understanding that we have applied and sent in the application because this was the deadline for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting community service grant money. And I wanted to pass it on. Julie, do you have any comments about that?
I'm catching up on my email, but I think it's fantastic.
Right, right. And, you know, and we all know, I've said again and again, we're plain craps because we know that there are problems. And all of us don't have to reiterate them. We all know it's not a perfect situation in the foundation. But it's a step forward in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. It's not the silver bullet. The silver bullet lies in changing all the stations to the better, particularly the weaker ones. But it's at least a step in the right direction to help us improve our fiscal situation at the very least. Any other comments or updates people want to raise right now before I move on?
Beth?
Go on,
briefly.
Beth. Yeah,
I think we missed the agenda item where we were going to assign a timekeeper.
Oh, okay. Good point. Who would like to volunteer to be a timekeeper?
I will do that if you don't mind.
Who's that, Fred or?
Yeah, Fred.
Oh, okay. You're good. Yeah, you like to do that. Okay.
I do because I like to keep people's time.
That's right. Like to keep us under wraps there a bit. All right. All right. Well, anyway, any more updates at this point that people want to raise or anything like that? All right. Hearing none, I'll move on. Now, we don't have Chris Corey here to talk about the bonds issue. And I didn't put podcasting. I know that Alex is interested in that. He's not here with us today, unfortunately. And we also don't have Lyndon here today to talk about the NFT issue, which he's been working on, and I'm not going to talk about that. And Heather is not here. The programming committee is going to convene tomorrow, so I'm not going to talk about that. And also, finally, we are going to have a report from the affiliates just to simply hear what Bill Foster and Heather had to say, and they're not here, so I'm not going to talk about that. So that's 8 minutes out of the way. I am going to talk quickly about AI and Pacifica and radio art and production training. I'll do that for 2 minutes. One, I think, and this we can talk about during our long conversation about short-term strategic goals. One of the things, of course, that always stands out to me in the station in Berkeley is they have institutionalized over many years training for production and you know, I use the term radio art, sound art. I mean, I was actually had the pleasure to have that kind of training when we had Andrew Phillips as the PD 30 years ago. But there is a necessity, I think, to begin thinking seriously about how we can handle this throughout the whole system and help those on air and those coming on air with learning sound measures about how to do that. Secondly, AI and Pacifica. I know that AI right now, artificial intelligence, is a big buzzword all over the place, but I raised the question of us thinking about this because iHeartRadio, someone has to unmute or mute themselves. iHeartRadio, basically has introduced AI and laid off literally dozens and dozens of on-air people. We already knew they were automated. But they're doing that and basically, you know, doing what they normally do, which is centralize and mechanize radio production. I'm not saying that we do that here because we haven't even reached the digitization revolution. But AI is something we have to think about. And yesterday I spent time doing it. I'll share that with the board and everyone else on Pacifica Airwaves. But I have asked a outfit to give us a demonstration of what they're doing. A outfit that's produced a radio chat type thing, and I will let people know when that happens. All right, so that's the end.
Time is up.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Fred. All right. Well, we can comment about this. Now, let me turn now to short-term strategic goals and what we should do now. And I've allocated 30 minutes for that. And part of what I'd like to begin with is simply talk about a few things that have to do with the immediate problems of revenue. We all know that everybody is working pretty hard in all the different stations as much as possible to try to turn that situation around. We had the unfortunate death of Roy Tuckman, who had a model of overnight shows, basically 5 to 6 hours of strip programming that created in the Los Angeles market a particularly amazing phenomena that he had a gigantic audience in that time slot that also over the years drew a loyal following and essentially was able to help raise a lot of money for the station in Los Angeles. And you know, the question becomes like, what do we do? How do we handle this present problem we're having in terms of generating revenue? You know, my mantra all the time is better programming equals better audience, et cetera. But why don't I open it up for people to talk about what we can do right now concretely to alter the situation that we're seeing around the network? What do you guys think? what are strategic options to do in altering the situation right now? Who wants to start?
Well, I'll
go on, Fred. Go on, Fred.
Stop, Ben. One of the things I suggested at the last PNB meeting I attended is that we, A, and I don't know if this has moved forward, Julie could tell me, I put together a item for the agenda that I wanted folks to bid on or to vote on that said that we were expecting every program general manager to give us examples of their best programming so that we can look at ways that they may either be shared with the other other decisions in the network or copied. And that was to be done by May 15th. I don't know if it ever even went to vote. I think we do need to have a good idea of what we are doing in the five stations that are core. Additionally, I've asked that the affiliates start feeding us information about their best programs. And I understand that, you know, there are regional differences and there are ethnic and geographic and ethnographic differences in the different markets that are part of the affiliates. But nonetheless, if we had that data, if we had that information, it would be something that we could try out in all the stations. All the stations should have a kind of a ranking of all their programs to show who is succeeding and who is not succeeding in bringing in money. And I know that there's an argument about how it's important for the Pacifica Network to have programming that is not popular. And I think that's a really nice idea that is going to kill us. That kind of program definitely belongs as a podcast where people can download it anytime they want forever and ever and ever. But the actual airtime is important, valuable, critical to subscribers. And I would really like to see us look at that sort of expansive operation to kind of make the best of Pacifica available to all the stations. I'm done.
All right. Good ideas, Fred. Anybody else want to chime in on this?
James, I'll take a stab at it.
Go on, Jim.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Fred was just saying, except I don't think we need to go to popular programming as it's commonly understood. We just need to have programming that may not be popular in the sense of the mass media market or mainstream media, but that's popular enough with enough people that we can pay our bills. So, you know, we have lots of programs that are directed at small audiences that are certainly worthwhile, but they don't generate the revenue that we need. So one thing we need to do is get programs that, you know, reach their audiences more effectively, and two, have programming that, you know, is more listenable for people. So, yeah, I'm agreeing with Fred. This is something Stephanie has talked about. She wants to do some branding, have national programs that people recognize. Oh, that's Pacifica I'm listening to, such as Democracy Now! Was at one time. And the overnights are a great place to try this. You know, Roy Tuchman had a unique model that he was, as Beth likes to point out, he was the only one making money in the overnights. And he was doing a lot of repeating shows that were done at other time slots, but and also at other stations. So yeah, let's cultivate programs from the archives, from the affiliates, and from the five stations, and try some experimentation, especially in the time slots where we've had programs on for a long time and they have very few listeners. And they bring in very few donations. It's time, that is something we're known for. We're our mission statement says we're supposed to present, broadcasting that's about things that are not, I forget what the exact words are, but not commonly found in the same medium. And we can do that, but also reach an audience that will sustain us. And so let's work with Stephanie on this. I guess she's not here right now, but let's work with her on this. She wants to do this. Let's try and help her make it happen. That could be a project for this committee. That could be something other than coming up with a sustainability plan. This committee could try and shepherd some of this through the PMB.
All right. Anybody else on this? Go on, Beth.
Yeah. Being from KPFK and being in the middle of a lot of turmoil this year and huge changes, I supported the current interim general manager in preserving, respecting and preserving Roy's audience, and not trying to make radical changes there. It's a lot of time, and there have been other people after that bunch of time for a long time. But at least for now, we're going to stick with what has worked to this point, and no doubt it will evolve because none of us are Roy. Roy's no longer here. But we did want to respect the work he's done in identifying that audience for us and those topics, the subject areas, and in responding to that audience's loyalty over many long years. And hopefully we can learn from it and use that model to improve our other programming. I've mentioned before when this topic has come up, not the topic of Roy, but the topic of what to do about programming. I think it's necessary to our programming ends up so calcified because everyone's engaged in defending their turf, their air turf.
Yes, your time is up.
And it makes it really difficult to make changes. And it means that any GM is effectively sticking his head above the parapet to make any changes like that. And so perhaps one of the services that the PNB can provide in this is in stepping up to be the heavy and mandating at some point, I don't know that tonight's the night to do it, but at some point mandating that the bottom performing 10% of programming is to be identified and retired and replaced. And I would like to hope that that would help get the attention of the next to the bottom 10%, that nobody's time is guaranteed and that everybody has to earn their spot on the air, and that that second 10% won't have, may have had a reprieve in this moment, but that, you know, I think it should be the first of a, I mean, in retail, you do this on a regular basis.
Yeah. Go on, Fred.
We're way over time. If your 2 minutes is for each one of these people,
let people finish. Go on, Beth.
Thanks. Just that I think we need to clearly there's an obstacle to doing this within Pacifica, and if we can, as the PNB can be, we don't have to identify that 10% or say what has to go in its place. We just have to insist that this has to be done. And the last thing, very briefly, is that as far as AI goes, I think we should position ourselves as the antidote to AI and the whole transhuman agenda. I think we're significantly placed in the realm of ideas to do that. And I think there will be a place in the marketplace for that, too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Julie. Go on, Julie.
Yeah. Sagerton said something that really resonated with me, which is, you know, just this notion that we should experiment. And so, you know, one of the things we could even do is have stations identify slots that are meant to be kind of experimental programming, right? And so, and that the idea would be, you know, it's a test bed, and, you know, if something succeeds, then it gets its own show, and then something else comes into the test bed slot, right? So, that's a way to kind of, you know, foster, experimentation and innovation. That's it.
All right. Yeah, Susan isn't here to, Susan left. I was curious because one of the reasons why we passed that motion last board, about all shows have to reapply was precisely to do this, to sort of make it certain that, you know, we want to be able to refresh the grids. And look, I was a producer myself, so I know I don't like people telling us what to do and, you know, threatening my airtime and all that, but you know, the airtime, you know, the use of the airtime is a privilege. It is a really significant privilege, and it has to be exploited well by that producer. At the same time, there's burdens on the foundation to give them the tools to do well. And that's there's a lot of problems that the foundation has not carried through in the past 20 to 30 years. That's why the models of what goes on in Berkeley is useful to sit there and listen and understand about. But anyway, anybody else want to comment, chime in on this issue? All right. I will, proceed on my thoughts about this. Yeah, go on, Jim.
I'll take another shot at it when you're done.
Okay. All our stations, you know, we have a 0.1% in New York of the market, 0.2 in LA, 0.2 in Houston, 0.3 to 4 in the Bay Area, and 0.6 to 8 in the metro market of Washington DC. Now, all those numbers are, the cum is about 100,000 at the max at this point, and it's really substantially down from what it used to be. We used to, in New York, I used to remember weekly cums of about 200,000, 250,000 on average. Certainly some cums were even higher than that. And it, you know, take it all with a grain of salt. The proof of the pudding was always in the amount of people that pledged during shows, during fundraising. You sort of saw the resilience and ability of people to survive or support shows based on those kind of statistics. So Fred earlier on raised a very good point, which is something I think we're going to have to revisit with a motion on this, to get this kind of data on a regular basis at the national level. Now, in terms of like sitting there thinking about draconianly imposing from on high on Mount Olympus, you know, dicta to the local stations to tell them they got to do this, they got to do that. The problem I have with that argument against that is that the stations themselves are not particularly, in some cases, performing well as it is. And shows that have been on for any number of years that after 6 or 7 years in a particular time slot are not generating sufficient financial support or sufficient listener members, and we can tell that by using the streaming data we have. You know, what are we going to do? Are you going to stay on until the particular host falls dead on the mic or what? I mean, you know, one has to take decisions about changing this now, because we all know that one of the problems we have is that these low numbers are responsible in part for the amount of money we get and the fact that over 90% of the money throughout the system now is skewed to our very loyal listener members. But that is something that we have to diversify. Go on, Fred. You have to unmute, Fred.
I thought Sagerton wanted to be next. I would like to say that, and I've said this before, it is not the job of the PNB to micromanage. The job of the PNB is to hire the executive director and the corporate council and let them micromanage. The job of the, you know, of our executive director is to micromanage the program directors. And so I think that we can avoid this entire question that you've just brought up by simply having the data, simply being able to show across the network the data. And if the managers aren't doing the job, then that becomes Stephanie's problem. And if Stephanie's not doing the job, then that becomes the PNB's problem. That trying to come up with these solutions that you call draconian is not our job. Our job is to make sure that the network survives by doing long-term planning, by looking at ways to improve our bottom line, by looking at ways to improve our revenue stream. That's all I wanted to say.
All right. Well, that's a very good point, Fred. It's true that it's not our job, but the problem is we're already in that state. But anyway, go on, Jim. Go on, Jim.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I want to pile on to Julie's thinking about having an experimental time. I've often said that the station should have an hour a week dedicated to playing programs from around the affiliates network. Because I know there's a lot of brilliant programming out there. And also, I am curious, as I assume others are, about what's going on in other parts of the country and the world. So I'd like to hear from the affiliates, and I'd like to have also an experimental hour. And, you know, possibly mixing and matching them. I don't know, you know, how the specifics would look. But, yeah, like what Julie said, would like to also recommend the affiliates program Sprouts to everyone, which is like a sample, they do sample the other, the programs around the affiliates network. And, let's make use of that. I mean, this is some strong programming and, you know, we can benefit from that. Some of our programming is not that strong, and let's benefit from the strong programming of our sister stations. Let's do it.
Right. Right. And that also means that the shows that are to be looked on to reinforce weak grids, they have to be sort of detached from the local specificity of, you know, like, for example, one of the problems that's always raised with bringing down the news that's produced in Berkeley down to Los Angeles is that while it's well produced, it's probably it's the best local news in the whole network, certainly the best funded. It's not necessarily specific to Los Angeles. And I know that they are setting up, and there's been a big controversy over the show that they set up. Some think it's great, some think it's not. But I'm going to bring on this guy from Harvard Shorenstein Center in the next couple of weeks. And he'll be talking about, not to us, but to the task force, the technology task force, about the ideas that they're coming up with at Shorenstein about reinforcing local public radio news in the situation that we're seeing historically over the past 50 years, that is the decline of local print news, the decline of print news nationally. I mean, all throughout the United States, the collapse of it. And I'm sort of curious to see what he has to say, because Pacifica, of course, could be an interesting vehicle to work with places like Shorenstein with ideas that they have that might be able to reinforce certain kinds of stations that currently exist. Plus, I might add that I was at a whole thing at Columbia Journalism School along the same lines about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and you know, I raised the question about Pacifica being in a situation where we don't have the resources, but we certainly have the freedom that other people don't have, and no one less than Eugene Robinson of MSNBC came up and told me how much he loves Pacifica. He thought it was great, Jim, that you raised these issues. And so these are openings we just have to cultivate that can only help us. And it doesn't mean we turn ourselves from grassroots radical movements, et cetera. I'm all in favor of doing that kind of stuff, 100%. But we just have to be figuring out how to reconfigure ourselves in the 21st century. Go on, Fred.
Yeah, actually, that's something I brought up the first time I spoke to the PNB. My experience was at one time with mainstream newspapers and magazines, and then I ended up living through the revolution to where we are currently no local news whatsoever. I worked for Knight Ritter and then McClatchy.
McClatchy, yeah, great outfit, McClatchy.
Were.
Right.
They sold out. They don't own it anymore. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that every one of these are going to the system that there's no real local news. ENG, which was Knight Ritter, and then it was, I don't know who the hell it was, some right wing piece of shit. At any rate, they literally had one editor and two reporters in each of the seven different newspapers they have all over the Bay Area from San Jose to Marin. And those editors would assign or work with the reporters to come up with 300 word stories. I remember when a 1600 word story was standard fare and they were like, no, you know, the entire story has to be in the first graph. It's an inverted pyramid and 300 story word stories is the thing. And what really, really was fascinating for me to watch was how Dave Price came in out of Colorado, started, in Palo Alto and then moved to Berkeley, with the second newspaper. And they did only local news. Mm. They didn't do any reporting of national news because they did all that through the wire services and they cut their overhead enormously. And this is kind of what's happened. The once great San Jose Mercury News, which is now called the Merc or the Mercury or something like that, is 99% wire service and very, very little local news. Mm. West County Times, the same network. The Marin IJ, same network. The Oakland Tribune, which is now called the Times, same network. I mean, you get a couple of reporters, one editor, and then it's all aggregated at the sausage factory, which I worked at in Pleasanton. And this is what's causing people, one of the reasons that people are not really reading the newspapers anymore. You can't hear local news. I remember reading at one point that one of the wire services was actually hiring folks in Southeast Asia to cover local council meetings because it's all done on the internet. And so they would have people that had no historic knowledge of what had transpired in a community, how it got to that point, and they would write these very, very lame, shallow stories. What Pacifica can do as a network is reverse that. We can actually have a couple, as many as two local reporters in each of the five networks and have them create stories that we share network-wide, and some of which will be of national importance and some of which we won't bother to share will be about the local high school, you know, team and how they won a championship. The way the mainstream media has responded to all this is the national stories that originate locally are all mass murders. And as my wife said to me this morning over coffee, she won't fucking read that stuff anymore. She just can't stand reading day after day about mass murders. And we have an obligation, a responsibility to do some of the coverage that is now lacking, that's no longer done by local newspapers, and that we could do very well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And, obviously, when it bleeds, it leads is a local phenomena and an international phenomena because, of course, when a war breaks out, they just love to pile on.
Sure.
The way they do. And, that gets into some of the solutions that have been talked about down in Los Angeles where, we all have our opinions about this lawsuit going on, with the people down there mentally. But the idea of the model of setting up, now again, I agree with you, Fred, there's a need to have paid staff involved in this. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because, they have to have certain anchors. They have to have certain reliable, folks there.
They have to be reliable. They have to be professional.
Exactly.
We have
exactly.
5 minutes left on this chat, on this thing.
Well, actually, we can devote the rest of this time to this. This is an important issue to talk about.
All right.
The question of getting people locally, let's see what Zuri was doing. She was mobilizing, I'm not going to get into the points of view and all that, but the idea is not a bad idea to have a local news hour, and then mobilize people locally to sort of populate it and do that at each station. Now, Berkeley's different. You guys have a strong paid news staff up there.
And New York City's got journalism schools called Columbia.
That's right.
That have graduates and that have, folks that's, getting graduate degrees who right. are looking for this kind of
right.
work.
Right, right. And the punchline of what happened that day was, an opening was made to Columbia Journalism School. It has to be, the doors open. It's up to us to go through and get them to help.
But grab them by the neck and bring them to work.
Well, that's right. That's right. But also, the questions of, you know, let's remember, we've got lots of different people in this network who have different philosophies of approach about how they want to deal with content. Some of them are irreconcilable, admittedly, to some extent. But the whole idea of community radio, yeah, I'm down with that. I'm down with making sure that contemporary social movements, all the kind of stuff that people think about from the 60s with Pacifica, that is important to do. But people always forget the fact that FM radio at that time was the exciting technology to exploit. You know, we have not recaptured that momentum in the present 2 to 3 decades that anyway can be compared to that situation at that time, when FM radio was the biggest thing since sliced bread for all sorts of reasons. So that to me is where our lack of integrating the digitization is a serious, serious factor. Go on, Julie.
Yeah, this point about journalism schools and local news, I think, is really spot on. And we can certainly carve a niche for ourselves in this regard. I mean, one of the things that, it's really sort of sad to say, but one of the things that I think we could be counted on to do is to have specific programs about local gun violence and, police, interactions that didn't go well for, say, you know, African-American men, young men, cause it happens often enough that, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that, at PFW, we wound up, kind of championing the cause of, the mother of a young man who was killed by the police. You know, I'm kind of one of the further out suburbs, but, at any rate, it's a way to build local community as well as getting that news out. And it's the kind of news that's not, it happens in every community and yet it doesn't get play in the mainstream media. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, that's what we could and should be doing. And then the other thing I was thinking was, how easy it would be to mobilize students from these journalism schools. And so anyway, I'm sorry, I'm piling on, but.
You're doing great.
It's an opportunity that presents itself, routinely, right? And that's right. The sad, sad truth.
Right. No, it's an opportunity.
Would be in charge of going out to those schools and getting them involved. Or the local program manager would be involved in doing that. You know, there's great opportunities out there that we are ignoring. And unfortunately, it seems to me that what we're doing is really safeguarding a lot of turf by people who are long shareholders of that turf.
All right. Go on, Julie.
Yeah. So the thing I was actually going to say until I got on the journalism school thing, it got, sort of worked up was, the point that I was going to make was, Heather's not here this evening, but, Heather's like a really big fan of community radio and has been for a really long time. And like just how important community radio can be to communities, right? And the 5 Pacifica stations happen to be in, major media markets, but that doesn't mean that there's no hunger for local news, right? It just means. Yeah. The local news is just a little bit bigger slice of pie than it is when you're talking about, a station in, Montana. But anyway, and so I just wanted to say that I think, while she's not here, Heather would, very much appreciate the conversation that we're having.
Well, at a period of time when the stations were less stressed financially, I'm thinking of New York now, there were about 3 to 4 paid staff in that newsroom. Amy came out of the newsroom. She was brought to the station by Andrew Phillips, who she met at Hunter College in the 80s. And that was when Andrew was doing documentaries on the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima and things like that he won national prizes for. So the newsroom experience, when I know Michael Novick, the IGM at, in Los Angeles, always brings up the newsroom. And I said to myself, well, you ever work in a newsroom, man? I mean, you know, like, do you really know what you're talking about? And, you know, yeah, he did up, he actually worked up to at KPFA, but again, the newsroom is not a source of I mean, you know, anyone who knows anything about journalism knows that news, at least up to the 70s and early 80s, that's not the big money maker.
No.
At the networks.
No.
You know, CBS News is what I know personally from friends of mine who work there and my little dealings with them. And, you know, they were not a money maker, but getting back to Pacifica, you know, one of the things we could think about is, you know, J schools reinforcing, absolutely. And each metro area has any number of J schools. I think, you know, again, I reached out to City University J School, NYU J School, and Columbia Journalism School at one point. At one point, Columbia Journalism School, we asked them to come in and take over the morning show when we had the layoffs. Because we wanted John Dingus, who was the head of the radio production program at Columbia Journalism School, a longtime friend of Pacifica, and who actually wrote an article in the Nation magazine during all the internal wars of the 90s. You know, he said, you know, Jim, that's a great idea. However, I can't commit a whole program into it. So one has to see that we can get different kinds of inputs from different places that can help us out, but they're not going to be the solution. And, you know, but I do think that's something we should think about, and we should cultivate, and someone has to take the lead on that. That's a lot of work. I know I ran around Manhattan for years to do that kind of thing. And now we're in a position perhaps where we can get the J School of Columbia to help. I say that in a 50-50 toss-up mode, but go on, Fred.
You say that news isn't a money maker, and I agree with you 1,000%, but it is an audience maker. And that's really critical. If we've got local news, then right, people tune in for the local news and they'll stick around for whatever's next.
Right, right. So I think, yeah, that, I would think all of us agree on that. Go on, Beth.
Thank you. Yes, take any one of these ideas and assess it relative to all the other ideas and prioritize it and then develop it over time, takes stable management, takes knowledgeable, capable, competent, stable management. And I think it's not a coincidence that the local programming at KPFK or the local news programming, the rebirth of local news at KPFK has taken place under the watch of Michael Novick, who has been there for, I guess, 7 months now, which is longer than anybody else has for a long, long time. And we're lucky to have him. I don't know from one day to the next how much longer that'll be. And I think we have to address the issue of providing stable, capable management, making that commitment over time, or we can, otherwise we're just going from hand to mouth and flying by the seat of our pants.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Thank you.
Well, the thing about news, and this is where we get into the strategic planning issues, is that news will permeate, you know, the skill of making news, the skill of learning how to do a 3 to 4 minute piece, an audio piece. That's a tough job. That's a tough task to perform. It's not easy to perform to do that well. And, the skill levels of doing that, at least at some stations, have basically diminished. I'll be charitable. And so to get those kind of skill sets in the mix, I think that's one part of the equation. Another part of the equation is, okay, local news, Pacifica can reinvent or tailor local news kind of initiatives to each market and figure out ways to do that. Of course, respecting the fact that the PD and GM locally are going to have their own way to do that. And then the third thing about this, getting back to the Roy Tuckman issue, one thing I thought about handling that issue was to take advantage of the technology of podcasting and essentially, and someone would have to actually produce this, but you know, you're talking about, okay, do you want to disrupt the overnight schedules of these stations or not? Because that's what Tuchman did. He basically had, what, 6 hours in a shot for years and years. And so eventually you're going to have people listen to it. But what he did was quite interesting. He would do things like, okay, I don't think Alan Watts is good for the New York market, to be honest with you. You know, I would try that out, but I wouldn't say that's necessarily good for the New York market. That might be better for Los Angeles or Northern California, but not for the New York market. But there's other things that he did that I found interesting. He would take and use congressional hearings and intermingle that, which I thought was a pretty smart thing to do. And take, you know, he'd take some of the, you know, Gary Null, whatever. I mean, you know, whatever, you know, I'm not going to get into a big battle about that or some of these, you know, strip shows like Hartman. But he mixed it up. He mixed it up and one could tailor, with a podcast type approach to each market. Okay. We're offering you an overnight podcast. It's 5 hours long. And it's going to start at 12 o'clock on our streaming, station. It's already produced and if you can take it or leave it. You can listen or not. We're going to make it available to you can listen to in a podcast format, which means it's mobile and flexible. And it could be tailored to the Los Angeles market, the Washington market, the New York market and the Houston market. And it could be something overnight. And remember, another thing that I discovered when we were doing all that investigation of Spanish radio programming is that the most successful, talk shows in the Los Angeles market, and I would want that woman who teaches in Santa Barbara to chime in on this. They're doing shows at 5 o'clock in the morning where they have migration lawyers who speak Spanish helping workers who are coming off the night shift, the graveyard shift, and they're getting ready to go to work. And those are the basis of some of the most listened to shows in Hispanic radio in general. So another, I threw that in as a curveball there, but in each of the markets we're in, we have lots and lots of undocumented folks. Anyway, go on, Fred. You got to unmute, Fred.
Music from the Hearts of Space was a program that was run off of KPFA. That ran for several hours. It was experimental music. I'm going to tell you straight up, New York's got a great experimental music scene. Washington's got a great blues scene. Chicago's got a great C&W scene. And these were very, very supportive programs that ran for years for multiple hours. You know, that's a great opportunity to do something like that where people will listen in. You know, if you're in New York City and you know where the local, loft where the jazz musicians all go to afterwards, and play their hearts out, you know, broadcasting that would be nothing but pure gold. And I've seen it because I've seen the movies. I've seen the discs that came out of it. Same thing with Hearts of Space. You know, he put out many, many discs of music from the Hearts of Space, and he had substantial support, from the local community that paid to listen to KPFA.
Well, that's a great idea.
I'm basically affirming what you're saying.
Great idea, Fred. See, that opens up the other question of music shows. I actually used to work in a TV production company. It was in a place like that. Where we had all the jazz musicians come in at 2 o'clock in the morning and those guys would carry on in the bottom and down in Tribeca. They'd be down there jamming until 6 in the morning and they would have a great old time. Now, and that raises questions about different forms of music that we don't necessarily exploit that I think we should exploit. And maybe the overnights are a good way to do that. And it gets into questions of copyright. And intellectual property rights, which we do have the ability to do. That's one of the reasons why I want us to get back to CBB, because we get all that ASCAP BMI stuff. We don't have to be paying for it the way we are now. But one of the things that is useful in that is I think that jazz is perfect to experiment with. One thing I was amazed when I was looking at this Harry Belafonte stuff, when he actually performed for the first time, he had some of the best and most famous early 51 jazz performers do his send off in a jazz bar in the 50s in Manhattan. I think he had McCoy Tyner. He had people of that caliber playing for him. So jazz is always a art form to be exploited. I also personally think that I would want to see as an experiment in a 5 to 6 hour slot, get a classical music DJ and have that person bang out some really good uncut Western classical music that also has an appeal to certain audiences. I used to go hang out with a guy at KPFA back, maybe 20 years ago. There was a guy there who did a world music show who was amazing. The guy had his whole house filled with CDs from around the world. And, you know, the world music scene is another thing. And then, you know, we just had Belafonte die. Now, this, I'd like to, you know, hear Julie's ideas about this or Donna's. Some people haven't talked at this point about this. I see that Otis is off doing something else. I'd be curious to hear what he had to say. But, you know, Belafonte is an international national figure. So when we have incidences of him, here's this guy who was an international star who dies. Okay, so why can't the whole network collaborate? Okay, because big deal. There might be somebody out there in Berkeley who knows a lot about Belafonte. Hey, bring him in the mix, or her. Bring the person in Los Angeles in the mix. I know we got people in New York who know a lot about Belafonte. And, you know, here's an opportunity for us to do a national show. And, yeah, light fundraising, okay? We don't have to pitch out of our minds about it. But, you know, the idea of national fundraising is something that's disappeared from our brains. Or doing national shows. When we didn't do a show nationally throughout the network on Roe v. Wade, I said, what the hell's going on here? I mean, this is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, we're going to have another problem coming up with the SOBs in the Hill with all this debt stuff. And to me, it's good to make common sense to the American people listening out there in our metro markets. We have 51 million potential people in the 5 metro markets we're in. Hey, we're going to do A through Z, Economics for Dummies thing on how this debt crisis affects you in your pocketbook. Okay? And we just miss these opportunities of national programming. And that's where, you know, and that's where, of course, the resentment about the money is, I think, the main issue that motivates that kind of dissension. You know, people are angry about, oh, New York's not performing well, or Los Angeles. I mean, that builds up over years. And that's, and I as someone who's elected by the WBAI listener members, yeah, I acknowledge that. That's a problem that has to be changed and fixed. So we don't get involved in these bullshit fights all the time. But,
New York is the center of America's intellectual capital. It really is.
Oh, of course.
It needs to be that. And, you know, New York should have put together. He grew up in fucking New York. Should have put together an entire network-wide Belafonte homage.
Right. And Fred, we did that well in New York. But I'm just saying.
Well, you didn't share it, motherfucker.
Well, all right. Well, that, and
this
I agree with you
100%. This is a public meeting and it's recorded.
I agree
with you, Fred.
This
is a public meeting and it's recorded.
All right. I agree with you, Fred. That's a situation that I'd like to see us think about how to solve. You know, from a strategic point of view, let's get back to the purpose of this committee. I think that's a strategic weakness of the network. The fact that things like that happen and we don't move on it like a dime. And that, you know, when Rodney King was that incident in Los Angeles, what are we all just going to depend on Los Angeles coverage for that? That was a national, international story. So I think that those are the kind of things we should think in terms of how do we actually effectuate it and make it practical in implementation. So we've gone through a number of things so far. Morning shows, Roy Tuckman, the model of strip programming. I always disagree with those who think strip programming doesn't work. I personally think that's idiotic because in fact it does work, unfortunately. Whether people like, but does that mean we then exclude other shows from being on the air? Of course not. That's why that digitization part of the mix is we have to further exploit that and allow you know, dissident opinions that we are filled with to have the ability to blossom, to have the ability to express themselves, to do a good job. Anyway, enough of me pontificating. Donna, we haven't heard anything from you. Do you want to chime in on this at all? I figure I put Donna on the spot. Okay. But go on, Beth.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to observe that we are the cultural creatives. I mean, that's kind of what we all have in common that brings us into the same room. And therefore, it's not as if we ever lack for ideas. We always have ideas. We have lots and lots of ideas. Where we fall short is on implementing. And we can talk all the way around this and come up with all these lovely opinions, but if we don't find a way to turn this into actionable items, then it's all just so much hot wind, you know, and it'll come and go the way everything else has. And I think we need to get really practical here and decide what we, you know, on next steps. If we can agree on any part of this analysis and any part of the options, then I think we have an obligation to figure out what to do with it, how to make it manifest.
All right, those are good, very good points, Beth. So what would you see, what are some ideas that you, how, give me some suggestions of how you'd want to make some of this actionable?
I've pointed to the last meeting and again this meeting that I think we need to retire the bottom 10% of our programming and open up some space to try something else. I think we need, speaking from the perspective of someone from K, I think we need stable management over time so that these, you know, an idea can be had and then cultivated and developed and implemented. Because if you keep playing musical chairs with management, you don't get anybody with follow through. So, you know, both those things look to me like low hanging fruit, pretty obvious things. I would point out too that Roy Tuffman, when he started, was experimental program until someone made the suggestion to, he'd been volunteering at the station and at KPFA before that for more than a decade, with just behind the scenes technical things. And the station was broadcasting nothing overnight from midnight to 6 a.m. And then I don't remember who it was, but whoever was the general manager, I think at the time, suggested to him that he just give it a try and see what he could come up with. And so he did. And, you know, it evolved over time. But essentially, he carried that for the station and developed that audience for more than 40 years. And it shows what's possible with a little continuity.
All right. So good points. All right. So the 10% issue is interesting. Before I go to Fred, there is a experimental radio program for the arts in New York called Radio Montez. I came across them a couple of years ago, and what they did was they do these pop-up streaming operations, basically a pirate radio operation. Because remember, in Brooklyn and the different boroughs, but Brooklyn alone, there are 35 pirate radio stations operating. So they do all sorts of interesting stuff. And this particular group of people did stuff that we would not do nowadays, but we sure as hell did when you look at the history of Pacifica. They'd play like 3 hours of lectures about Freud. You know, now, okay, I don't know if I'd want to hear that at 6 o'clock, but you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't give a damn. So I think that kind of, and you know, and imagine also the publicity aspects of this, because you know, somebody from the Times or the local news is saying, well, look at what these guys are doing. They're playing like Freud for 3 hours. I mean, you know, I mean, they're going back to their roots, frankly, but you know, that kind of, I mean, we have to think imaginatively about what can attract. And by popular, I'll define what, and Fred can correct me on this, talking about, we want numbers of people listening. I want, you know, we want like thousands of people listening, not dozens of people. And there's a space for that too. Don't get me wrong. But my objective would be thinking that let's have lots of people listening and let's play around with these strip programs in the overnights and maybe think about how we could use that model elsewhere to modify and bring in audience and do things that can create a creative buzz. Anyway, go on, Fred.
I'm just going to reaffirm, I think it was James Sagerton who said that the affiliates have a program called Sprouts where they broadcast the best of the affiliates. Why don't we broadcast that?
Good question.
That's, you know, Beth wants us to do something active, something right now. We could say they've already gone through the best of their 160 affiliates and figured out what was the best. Why aren't we broadcasting that and, you know, just giving them credit? You know, the KPFA affiliates, public radio in your community, support local community radio here and there. And now listen to Sprouts.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Good point, Fred. Julie and Jim and Donna, you want to chime in here on these issues? Go on, Julie.
I mean, I totally agree on Sprouts. It just, you know, it just seems like, you know, as a strip programming kind of thing, you know, just to say that there's like a time where, you know, we all play Sprouts, right? That it's like an hour dedicated, you know, whether it's once a week or, you know, maybe part of what you do is you set up local news program, but then like, you know, you do local news Monday through Thursday, and then you do Sprouts, which is like local news, but from all over, right? And so, you know, people get a sense of, you know, kind of like what matters in this big wide country.
All right. Those are good points. Go on, Jim.
I remind you, it's not an interview show, but besides that, I want to say that, you know, as we all know, we got a lot of financial constraints right now, and some of the ideas that we come up with, you know, would involve spending money, but rebroadcasting programs from the affiliates, rebroadcasting programs from the sister stations doesn't cost us much, if anything, almost nothing. And, you know, there's a great potential for us to, you know, squeeze revenue out of it. So again, I say, let's do it.
Well, another thing I learned when I was doing television was one of the easiest things for content was to be following the latest release of art films and documentary films. And, you know, you get a documentary filmmaker or a director of a feature film. That's all you need. And then you get permission from them to play certain clips to illustrate, you know, the drama of it. And certainly with documentary films, you can do that. I used to work with POV, American Experience, Frontline. I used to have a good relationship with those guys, because they do great work. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's worthwhile to do that. Now, in terms of another thing that we could do in the overnights, which I just begin to dawn on me as I'm thinking about this, is reaching out to international, folks around the world. In other words, there are people doing stuff in Europe. There's people doing stuff in Africa. There's people doing stuff in Latin America, all over the world. The best way to do that, I don't know if anybody's ever seen that radio application allows you to essentially go across the world and see all these radio stations. I forget what they call it. Radio, it has some fun name. I forget what it is, but
I've got it on my thing. I can't remember.
You know what I'm talking about. It has the whole globe of the world and you go over it and you're
fabulous.
Radio stations. And, you know, there's another source of content. Okay, what's the point of view in Africa about issues that are facing them? What are they locally talking about, like South Africa or all West Africa or the Horn? I mean,
Sudan.
And the Sudan, for example. The Sudan is something that, you know, I wish my sister-in-law was still alive, because that's what she did for Human Rights Watch for the last 10 years of her life. just concentrated on the Sudan. So there are things we can do. And the timeliness issue is to me the most important thing to do. That's where the podcast and the digitization allows to do stuff. We don't have to be rigid with the analog stuff. I don't care. Let some producers, you know, part of it is reconceiving how to use the analog. Is the analog to be the ultimate destination for every show? I don't think so. I think we have to separate the analog into morning and afternoon drive. And morning and afternoon drive is now being traditionally rethought because they don't have FM radios in cars anymore. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame, and we're not thinking about that. We're complaining about our falling audiences. There's reasons why this is going on. Technology's changing, and we're not adapting to it. Go on, Sagerton. Go on, Jim.
I want to say again that some of these ideas about podcasting have been kicking around for a long time. I realize they don't really take a lot of money to implement, but we just don't seem to have gotten around to it. I want to reemphasize that sometimes the best way to generate revenue is to utilize what you've got. So let's utilize the successful programs that we have and share them around the network. Let's utilize the assets that we have with the affiliates.
Right.
And use that on the sister stations. So it's just like with membership. You know, if you have good membership software, which we do, we just don't use it very effectively. A simple thank you can generate 10% additional donations on average from the donors. You know, reminding people when to renew their membership, that their membership has expired.
Right.
People, if you remind them, but if you don't, it just, they don't remember. So right. Let's use what we've got. We're in a desperate financial situation. We don't have money. Let's right. Focus inward and use what we've got.
All right. And before I bring Fred on, I wanted to say that something the archives could do. Okay. Remember last year, 2 years ago, we had a big hoopla here to have a national fundraiser to help the archives. All right. And we know a lot of us participated in that meeting. Fred wasn't around at the time, but all of us did. Most of us on this call did. And okay. We left it to the PDs and GMs to plan. All right. Now what happened? It shows me that there's a need for the archives to be, and again, I don't know what their situation is. I know they're under the gun. They got, you know, all the move stuff. Everything else is, you know, like I'm sure it's a lot of pressure. But the need to produce new products from the archives is very important. I think that one of the reasons why that didn't do too well was they were selling the same thing they sold for the past 5 years. And I think they're about ready to do another fund drive with the same premium. And, you know, hey, you know, I know it's difficult to put this stuff together, to get it clean. I've done audio production. I know it's time consuming to do it well, but at the very least, they should expect to be able to introduce a new product or a couple of products that are based on those archives we have. And I just raised that as an issue because I know that they're going to do another national fundraiser for the archives. And I believe they're going to use the same premium they used last time a year ago. And, you know, okay, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work, but I know it only raised $30,000 last time, and maybe people should think about producing new premium.
I'm by that. That's outrageous.
Well, anyway, yeah. Well, I just was told that I could be wrong. Okay, all you people out there who listen to us and are willing to jump on our case, I could be wrong. However, if I am right, it would be useful for us to think about producing a new premium. Go on, Fred.
I recently read an article that was not directly related to Pacifica that talked about the archives. And there is some famous woman musician who first sang her hit smash in the 50s on PPFA, and that we have the audio on that. You know, there's so many rich things in the archives that should be actually money producing and that we're not taking care of, that we're not nurturing and watering and fertilizing and growing. And it's kind of it shocks me that we have this incredible resource that we basically ignore.
Well, it's an interesting question how to, and of course, one of the things with those poor guys, Jim, you got to mute. Your phone is causing a lot of static, or maybe.
Careful getting into discussing personnel in an open meeting.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Okay. We'll refrain from that. But, one of the things that's interesting about that is that, you know, I think there's other ways. We'll take the ideas, you know, John, just be interesting to hear a more, a good account of some of the ideas, maybe an audio of this. I think, Otis will have it, and then I'll start listening to it and come out with motions with other people cooperating with me, because there's a lot of different ideas we've been throwing out tonight. I'd like to see them concretized into motions. But the idea of basically having the archives more robust in creatively marketing themselves. I know that Stephanie was mentioning that there may be the use of that in other contexts in Los Angeles. But I remember years ago, the director of the Tamet Library at NYU asked me personally if I could get permission from Pacifica to allow them to air some of the stuff that they have on their website as a sort of attraction to the masses. In other words, you know, Martin Luther King, we know, is always locked in copyright battles. But, you know, stuff that we had. And I said, that's a great idea, man. I don't have the juice to do that. I don't have the power to do that. But that's a brilliant idea. Because his idea was to put stuff up and let people hear it. And then when they start complaining about copyright, okay, take it down. But a couple of, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, pieces that are historical audio that essentially can be shared. That can be shared as a sort of a market teaser. And again, this whole thing about how to market the different content we have, we just have to be much more creative and more imaginative than we are right now.
We have right. 7 minutes to
yeah,
sit down.
Yeah. And does anybody else have anything they want to chime in on this? Cause I will then, we have some important business to get an executive session. Does anybody else want to chime in this? I know we've been brainstorming a lot, and what I'll do, John, is, or I'll ask Otis to give me the audio so we can actually listen to it. Everybody came up with some very good ideas. I'd like to, craft some motions out of them and then run it by everybody. But does anybody else have anything pressing that they want to talk about right now in this vein?
Yeah, I'd like to offer a motion.
Okay, Jim.
I'd like to ask Stephanie at our next meeting to bring forward, I know she's been working on this, and perhaps an executive session because it involves personnel, to bring forward the results of her work in looking into, you know, which programs are not performing and which ones are. And begin the conversation about what to do about national programming. Now, Stephanie has said, and it's true, that her job description does not allow her to take a direct role in programming, and that is the case. But as someone said earlier, possibly Fred, you know, she is the executive director. She supervises the program directors. So I would like to get her input based on her work so far, and, you know, see what he has to recommend. And let us, as this strategic planning committee, try to steward some of this stuff. Again, I said steward this through the PNB and implement it. Let's get something done.
All right. Are you making now you got a better crafted motion?
That was not motion language. So let's cobble together the words.
All right. And then I think sort of what, Beth was also talking about is an interesting idea. And then I would also want to talk about the model of Tuckman. You know, what can we do to take that model and make it more effective or use its, better qualities to improve our audiences around the country? And that's not a motion. I'm just like thinking out loud.
Tuckman is a very special case. You know, Tuckman is a guy that I just heard tonight was behind the scenes for 10 years. He was given a spot. He was given carte blanche and he took it and ran. And that's wonderful. If you could figure out which one of those guys, those pass receivers, catches every ball, then you're going to be the coach of the year. We can't really do that without trying it. So asking her to revitalize Tuckman is
No. I hear you, Fred. I mean, You're talking about somebody who was a badass free safety in his youth. So I always used to like to mess up those receivers.
That nobody knew was. But everybody ignored for 10 years of his career at Pacifica.
I think, no, I would not say that everybody ignored.
We don't need to argue about that.
All right. We don't need to argue about that. I certainly paid attention to him because the fact that he did so well was obvious to me. He was the only guy doing the crafting of that show, and he was on there consistently for all those years. So it was inevitable to get an audience. But, Jim, if you can come up with some language before we sign out, I'd be more than happy to throw it. But yeah, we could figure out a way, Fred. Those are all good points, Fred. You're right about it. We can't
separate these different items that, you know, may be properly divided as right. Motion. What I'm concerned about is move that the executive director report in executive session to the strategic planning committee at the next meeting she attends on the results of her investigation into programming that is successful and sharing programming and branding through national programs.
All right. Is that acceptable to everybody? Everybody agrees on that one?
That's fine, but have we told Stephanie to look into that data yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been talking about this for a long time. Does everybody agree with that one?
Sure.
All right. Do I hear any opposition to it? All right. Hearing none, let's consider that we unanimously agreed with that. All right. I'm going to ask.
I have a question.
Go on, Beth.
Question.
Yeah.
Didn't we pass a motion at the last meeting? And I'm wondering whatever became of that. I don't have the wording in front of me, but I think it had to do with, you know, identifying the lowest performing. I don't remember.
John,
I would have to.
All right, John.
If we passed that, which I think we did, we need to then. The chair needs to carry it to the P&B because we don't actually get to make those resolutions. We move them to the P&B, and that's where
I believe that motion was proposed during the executive session.
Did we pass it, John?
I hung up before we got to that point. I'm going to rely on you.
All right. Why don't we wait? Why don't we wait on that one? And why don't we wait until we get into the executive session, and then we can clarify that and maybe revisit it. Okay, Beth?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, so I'm going to adjourn the open session of this meeting.